Some people buy digital currencies like Bitcoin to thumb their noses at government authority. Some buy it because it seems cool. But for those who buy it as a store of wealth, we have been tracking an ongoing reminder of what goes up goes down. I'm David Brancaccio. First, the stock market. The day after another surge downward, a new dawn in early trading, it seems here. The NASDAQ composite, after the big drop yesterday, is up 2.1%. The Dow is up 424 points this morning, 1.2%. S&P up 1.6%. We're waiting for the U.S. Federal Reserve to brief on interest rates, stimulus, and inflation just over 4 hours from now. The betting is that rates start to go up on March the 16th, the day the Fed's next policy meeting wraps up. That would be, I think, 15 days into Lent in the spirit of taking away the punch bowl. Now, Bitcoin is down 43% from around Veterans Day in November and down 17% this month alone, although today it's up. And the Federal Reserve might have something to do with that, its decline. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here to explain.
Yeah, a bit ironic, David, since cryptocurrencies were designed to be independent of central banks. But the calculations for many investors appear to be the same, whether they hold Bitcoin, Ethereum, other cryptocurrencies, or whether they hold highly valued tech stocks or growth stocks. And that calculation, according to the prevailing wisdom on Wall Street, is that the high likelihood of Fed interest rate hikes this year has an effect on riskier investments. The thinking goes that there's less need to take risks if some of your money can get a better return in relatively safe instruments like bonds should interest rates rise. So money could move away from riskier assets like cryptocurrencies toward safer ones. And we're seeing moves now that are anticipating that.
But Bitcoin and many other cryptocurrencies have been on the skids for, looks like, 2.5 months, really, even while the S&P 500 stock index was still going up late last year. What gives?
Yeah, the high point was in November, and it's been steadily declining since then. At the end of the day, cryptocurrencies are worth what people think they're worth. They're highly volatile. The cryptocurrency exchange platform Coinbase and its email newsletter this morning was reminding people of the middle of last year when Bitcoin lost about 50% of its value within a few months, starting in mid-April, and then shot back up to a new all-time high. This volatility has regulators in Washington paying attention. There are reports that the White House is getting ready to put out a memorandum to better synchronize regulation in this area, and we're hearing that that memo could come within days or perhaps next month.
That is Nova Safo. The 10-year interest rate is up at 1.78% this morning. With the opening of the Beijing Olympics just over a week away now, a new report questions the future viability of the Winter Games. It's the first time they're using almost entirely fake snow. Environmentalists claim that's unsustainable, while some athletes say it's dangerous. The BBC's Alex Capstick has more.
The mountain venues to the north of Beijing are covered in snow, but hardly any of it is real. The region is arid, and so giant machines have been working hard to create the right conditions for the ski and snowboarding events to take place. The authors of a new report entitled Slippery Slopes warn that climate change means that man-made snow, which is bad for the environment, could become the norm. And athletes in the study have expressed concern that fake snow, which is densely packed together and therefore creates faster conditions, could lead to more injuries. China claims these games will be, in their words, clean and green. But the report's broader message is that as the planet warms up, the colder seasons will continue to get shorter and more erratic, until eventually even artificial solutions will not be enough to guarantee the future of winter sports.
Alex Capstick is with our newsroom partner, the BBC. It can be hard to find a therapist to help with our mental well-being. The stresses of pandemic have met the ongoing shortage of mental care professionals. Some smartphone apps may help and telephone hotlines. Shalina Chutlani of the Gulf States Newsroom reports.
When COVID hit in 2020, New Orleans photographer Matthew Seltzer lost his day job. Then his grandfather passed away. One place he found relief was behind the lens of his camera.
For those brief seconds, life felt normal. but the weight of the pandemic was heavy.
Seltzer tried to find a therapist, but no one was available. So he turned to YouTube videos online and eventually called a mental health hotline. It was awkward at first.
But I feel like it does help for people that need someone to talk to, you know, right away.
Calls to hotlines have been on the rise over the last 5 years and skyrocketed during the pandemic. One national line run by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration saw an increase of 23% in monthly calls between 2020 and 2021.
It's a lot higher of a volume of intensity to the phone calls.
Sherrod Crespo is a clinical supervisor at ViaLink, a nonprofit in New Orleans. It runs a handful of phone, text, and email hotlines. Crespo says during COVID-19, people hit their breaking point.
They were like, I'm not going to be stoic anymore. I'm freaking out.
These hotlines don't provide therapy. They can help point people to more long-term solutions. And what people need now isn't just emotional relief, but housing, food, and safety. New Orleans Public Television launched a weekly show called Coping During the COVID Crisis, co-hosted by Roy Salgado.
We're anxious, and it's okay.
He's a mental health counselor and faculty member at the University of Holy Cross in New Orleans.
This show offers more people an opportunity to acquire skills and coping skills.
The show has expanded from a limited series to multiple seasons. Salgado says now people are taking their mental health more seriously.
We have learned that we are adaptable as a species of people and that we are resilient.
And he says he believes the resources we're developing now will stick around. In New Orleans, I'm Shalina Chotlani for Marketplace.
We're learning more about how auto manufacturers are coping with an ongoing shortage of computer chips as their quarterly results come out this week. Today, Tesla will report profits and losses and give its view of the road ahead. Something else precious electric car companies need, it's called lithium, a key metal in batteries, you know, lithium ion. Lithium's price is up 400% in the past year. Here's Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes.
To understand why lithium is so useful, a short chemistry lesson from Chris Berry, a strategic metals consultant and president of House Mountain Partners.
Lithium is the lightest of all metals. It's number 3 on the periodic table.
If you can picture the periodic table of elements, it's right up in the top left corner under hydrogen. Lithium's lightness also helps it store a lot of energy. That makes it useful for electronics. Viba Caldra is a professor of chemical engineering at Drexel.
When you have it in cell phones or electric cars, you want lots of energy with the minimum amount of weight. And lithium is great for that.
So great that the demand for lithium-ion batteries is higher than ever, says metals analyst Chris Berry.
Well, the price actually, and this is probably not the right word to use with batteries, but the price of lithium has exploded in the last year or so.
As much as $50,000 per ton. And Berry says that some battery manufacturers are starting to raise their prices in order to cover that cost. And that's not going to make electric cars more attractive.
We're all sort of focused on this tipping point when an electric vehicle becomes cheaper to purchase and then own and operate than a comparable internal combustion engine car.
And lithium-ion batteries are also at their limit in terms of how much energy they can store, says Drexel's Viba Caldra.
So there's only incremental changes that we can do right now. But for true sustainability of electrification, of transport, we need next-generation technologies.
That work is underway. Scientists are developing batteries with other elements. Christine Pearson researches new battery materials as a professor at UC Berkeley. She said there's promising work with sodium.
You can definitely make sodium-ion batteries. CATL in China has commercialized it.
CATL is a Chinese company that's trying to be a pioneer with this new sodium-ion battery. But Pearson points out, sodium doesn't store as much energy as lithium does. That means a car gets fewer miles out of a charge or needs a bigger, heavier battery. And for now, all of those are a hard sell. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Our tech team did a podcast series about solutions to the climate crisis with the search for lithium as a running thread. It's called How We Survive. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.